to be able to stop God's plans, they'd have to be bigger than him. So, here's the thing. We get confused, don't we? We have a desire. We make a plan to fill the desire. And the more we obsess on it and feed that desire, pretty soon we get it confused with God's plan. I want this to happen, therefore it must be God's will, is the bottom line logic of that. I don't know if you've ever done this. I used to be famous for trying to sell God on my programs. You know, God, I've researched this. You got a minute? Can you sit down, Lord? I've got a few facts you probably don't know. And I'm reading all, I'm trying to talk him into all this thing, just like you were doing about getting that Fiat 500 with your earthly father. Good luck with that, by the way. See, if you show up, I'll embarrass you. That's just, which is why hardly anybody shows up. I have a plan. I have a desire. And man, I tell you, the more that I stare at it, the more I tell myself what a good idea, and it might be a good idea. I mean, how much better of an idea could you have than to go back and help those people where you planted the seeds? Here's the deal. It wasn't God's plan for a while. So was it all out of control? Because it said Satan stopped us. Satan stopped what? Did he stop God's plan? No, he just stopped Paul's plan. Here's really interesting. If you read those few chapters in Acts, it's quite illuminating. Because the way Satan stopped them is Paul got sick, which wound up resulting in having to call a physician named Luke, who wound up writing the book of Acts and the Gospel of Luke and being Paul's best buddy the rest of his life. He got thrown in jail. You know how God works with jails. I mean, every time Satan threw something at him to stop Paul from getting back to Thessalonica, God goes, hey, go for it, because you just plopped my most faithful servant right where I want him. Okay, and let's just flip that coin over and say, what if Paul had been allowed to fulfill his desire? Who knows who would have never heard the gospel in jail? Who knows if he'd ever met Luke? You know what I mean? When our plan doesn't work out, we feel like it's all out of control or somehow, I rebuke you, Satan, and you know, I just claim that you stopped stopping me. And I've had the Lord so many times say, son, I'm not as jazzed about your plan as you are. I have a better one. And right now, this sickness, right now, this financial slump, right now, this closed door is part of my plan, even though it's not part of yours. In Elizabeth Elliot's book on God's guidance, which I still think is the best book ever written on that subject, certainly the most thorough, she wrote something that hit me right between the eyes. She said, sometimes for God's will to be done, my will has to be undone. I don't like that. I don't like it when my will is undone. The more I have invested into my plan and my desire, I think the harder it is for me to hear. If God wants to say no, I'm just pedal to the metal, going out and doing it. And I think often we're discouraged at all the wrong times. We're discouraged because our plans aren't coming to pass, and we stop to think that God's plans might not be exactly the same as mine, and his are better. And this closed door or this thing that I would rather change, and I want to go do this thing because I'm just sure that's the right thing to do, God may want to do something completely different. Interestingly, Paul did get Timothy back there, and it was quite a long period of time. But when Timothy came back, he said, you know, those guys are doing just fine. Have you ever thought, if I don't do this, it's going to fail? Have you ever prayed the kind of prayer, Lord, I'm exhausted.
could you just kind of hold this together for a few hours until I can take over again?
It's so silly. I've done that very thing. I'm sure he snickered one time back in my worry days when he said, son, get your rest. I'll try to hold your life together for a couple hours. I swear I heard laughter in the heavenly regions. Here's the other thing I wanted to say in this rabbit trail. God's plans can't be sabotaged. My plans often can, but that still doesn't stop God from accomplishing what he wants to. Satan always plays right into God's hand. He has to. Ultimately, that's the story of the Bible. Read Revelation. Give it your best shot, Satan. You need another 1,000 years? Hey, go for it. God's still going to get his will accomplished. But I believe that disappointment, almost categorically, disappointment comes from the fact that my plan didn't come true, and so I'm disappointed when God had a better one. Know what I mean? Because I don't believe if we could see things the way God sees it, that we'd ever be disappointed in what he's doing, because he's perfect, and he's loving, and he's right. So I got a lot out of that one little rabbit trail, and I better get going because we haven't even got to chapter 3 yet. We wanted to come. Satan stopped us. Interestingly, a little bit later, we got another rabbit trail. We said, now I'm praying that God will clear the way. And that's a whole different ballgame. He said, you're our crown. Man, if I have anything to look forward to in heaven, isn't it you? Interestingly, I've read it. Paul said this in a couple of his letters. In one case, he talked about his earnest desire to present the church before Jesus on their wedding day when they're married. And I was said this last night. I'm looking forward to the day when Patricia isn't confined to her bed and she can stand up and she's being married to Jesus. Do you, Patricia, take Jesus to be your lawfully wedded husband forever? And I'll be sitting out there in the crowd, and I'll turn to somebody and nudge them and say, I took them out on their first date. I introduced them. Isn't this cool? They're going to be married forever. That's not a small thing. That keeps me going, folks. When people don't care, when people stop coming, when people just, the word of God doesn't seem to be phasing them. I know that some of you are going to reap eternal rewards. I'm going to reap eternal rewards of being married to Jesus because of somebody that was faithful speaking the word to me. And so I understand that feeling that Paul has. He said, this is the crown I'm looking for. He's saying that's why I couldn't stand it, that I couldn't get to you. And verse 1 of chapter 3 says, when we could stand it no longer, we thought it best to be left by ourselves in Athens, and we just sent Timothy. Silas and I stayed. And we sent Timothy. I told you to do two things. Establish, the New King James uses for the NIV's word strengthen. That's a much better word. He uses the same word down in verse 13. If you're interested, I know some of you care about such thing. The Greek word is the word sterizo, sterizo. It's a word of settled permanence. In fact, if you study the etymology of words, and I'm being a word guy, I love this word. The root of this word literally means to build a buttress. You know what a buttress is in medieval architecture? It was when they built these big tall walls, they had to put a brace on them to hold them up so that they wouldn't fall over. That's at the root of this word, sterizo. So establish is a good word. I think it's a lot fatter word than just strengthen. So he said, I'm sending Timothy down. We sent Timothy down just to build you guys up, to fortify you. and to encourage you. And here's the word we've looked at, what, 500 times in the last 12 years? Well, I don't think anybody's been here 12 years but me. The word is parakaleo, encourage, comfort. Remember, once again, this word means to call alongside in order to help. So we sent Timothy to establish you, to come alongside of you in order to help you in your faith. And I know that this is maybe being nitpicky, but I know a few people that listen to these Bible studies from other states, and they're nitpickers just like me, and they always appreciate this. Notice it does not say Timothy to establish you and encourage you in the faith. No definite article. It's a personal pronoun, meaning that you're trusting in Jesus. You're clinging to him. You're relying upon him, not Timothy, go and run these people through the doctrinal statement. You know what I mean? And there is a difference. So there are some churches that all they do is talk about the faith as a body of beliefs, as a system of beliefs. But people don't know, how do you trust God themselves personally? They don't know. I have always felt that the best way to learn how to trust God is to have somebody in your life who's trusting God. Better than reading a book. Elizabeth Elliot, again in her book on God's guidance, said, I would 10 times rather have a guide go with me than the best set of instructions and the most expert advice. When I'm heading off to the jungle, I just want somebody there that's been there, that knows what to do. And I think that God has told me ever since I got here that who I am is supposed to be my ministry. Which means that if we want God to use us to encourage and strengthen other people in their faith, then we're going to have to trust God. If we come in and we're making $100,000 a year and we don't have any problems, then all we can do is lecture. God can't use me to encourage anybody's faith unless I have to trust him in front of them. You can't trust God for somebody. But you can trust God in front of them and beside them. But it means you're going to have to go through your own deal to back it up. And I just love that God, so often, rather than sending instructions or holding a lecture or a workshop, God sends a person. He sends a person into our lives and says, okay, hang out with this person, walk them through it. Live a life of trust. I have to tell you, it's much easier to preach at people and lecture people than it is to live it in front of them. But it's the best way. So I'm proud of you, Tim. Proud of you, Timothy, that you took that assignment. Because he said, I didn't want anybody to be unsettled. That's a word that I think of all of the synonyms in English for that Greek word. That's maybe the weakest one. It is true. It does mean unsettled, but it has to do with being beguiled or led astray. It has to do with somebody's faith being undermined. And that brings up the other lie that they were telling about Paul. The other lie, and I've had this said about me. If this guy really is a servant of God, why is all this bad stuff happening to him? Paul shows up in town, and every place he goes, there's a riot. He gets thrown in jail. None of the religious leaders are backing him up. How could he be a man of God? Does that sound remotely familiar? You know any other servant of God that ever heard that said about him? Jesus, top of the list. When he was being discredited, they had the religious leaders of Israel had the nerve to say, look, he can't be of God. We haven't approved him. And besides, look at all this bad stuff that's happening. I have to admit, if nobody told you to expect bad stuff to happen, when you were doing God's will. It's very disheartening, and I've seen more than one person stumble over that. But if nobody ever told you that you could expect that, then you were not told the whole truth. Here's what I love about Jesus. Paul says right here, he said, the whole time I was with you, I told you that Jesus told me this was going to be my life story. Remember in Acts 9, Saul of Tarsus, the fire-breathing maniac, meets Jesus on the road to Damascus and goes blind, and God leads him down to a town and calls one humble, faithful servant named Ananias and said, you know that Saul of Tarsus, the guy that's killing everybody? You know, his picture's in the Christian post office, public enemy number one. He said, you know that guy? Guess what? He's my servant now. I want you to go pray for him that he'll receive his sight. And Ananias argues with God, as I'm sure I would too. If God said, Bob, here's your plane ticket. Go to Iran. Ahmadinejad has met me in the privacy of his own home, and I want you to lay hands on him and pray for him to be healed. And I thought, who is this really? Who's this telling me? It didn't make sense. But there's that one little innocuous statement in there, and I forgot to write down which verse it is. I think it's 16 or 17 in Acts chapter 9, right in the teens. Here's what God said to Ananias. He said, I have told him everything that he must suffer for my sake. I'd love that about Jesus. I meet a lot of rosy-cheeked, starry-eyed Pollyanna Christians who somehow have the idea that if you do all the right things, nothing bad's ever going to happen. That just is flat not biblical. It doesn't fit anybody that served God. All of them had bad stuff happen. And it flagrantly. It stinks. Maybe it is fragrantly. It flies in the face of John 16:33, where Jesus promised us in the world we would have trouble as his disciple. That's not the whole promise. The promise is that in him we would have peace and that he's overcome the world. But he said, brace yourself, you're going to have trouble. Why does that shock us? Well, it's why we invented the whole doctrine that if you're a good little Christian and do all the right things, everyone's going to like you and you'll be rich and everything fabulous is going to happen. But that's just not the message. I love that Jesus tells me the whole story. He said that to me as I'm leaving everything I love in my rearview mirror, pulling a U-Haul trailer, moving out here. He said, son, telling you right up front, this isn't going to be easy. Thank you for saying yes. You don't have to do it on your own. I'll be with you. Yes, it is what I want you to do, but this is not going to be easy. I am so grateful he didn't go into detail. If he did for me what he did for Saul of Tarsus, I probably wouldn't have come. Shame to say that, but I'm just not that noble. So I find it astonishing that Jesus told Paul everything that was going to happen and Paul still said yes. That's one reason he's my hero. I barely hang in there when stuff takes me by surprise. He knew what was going to happen. And he still said, yes, good for you. So he's just reminding them, look, remember I told you? I told you what Jesus told me. You know, this isn't going to be smooth. By the way, God said that same thing to me on my wedding day. He said, this is what I want, but this isn't going to be easy. Good is not the same as easy all of the time. He's just saying, look, you know, yeah, I know, I know it looks like I get chased out every town I go in, but remember I told you Jesus told me that was going to happen. You know what? To be fair, it may have been unnecessary for him to explain, because when Timothy came back with the report, he said, you know, they still love you, they can't wait to see you. So the lies may not have worked anyway, but I know that feeling. When you stay awake at night, think about the lies that are being told. You just, any opportunity you have to defend yourself, which I think is why you take advantage of it, but I think that's why God doesn't give me opportunities to defend myself, because I'll mess it up. Don't you hate it when things are being said about you that aren't true? I remember Gail Irwin one time at a pastor's conference says, you know, the only reason that bothers you is because of pride. Oh, I hated him for saying that. But it was true. If it wasn't for my stinking pride, I wouldn't care what people think about me. So, Paul was more concerned not just that they believe he was a bad guy, but that believing he was a bad guy would undermine the truth that he had spoken, that they had put their trust in. And that's what he's talking about. I was afraid that Satan would have come in and tempted you, and the lies would have won, and it would have been a fruitless ministry while I was there. The word for tempt here in verse 5 is the word peirazo in Greek. We've looked at it many times, notably in James it's used. It's one of those words that is translated tempt or test, and it has a different purpose depending on who's doing it. When God tests us, it's to approve us. When Satan tests us, it's to see us fall. But the word is the same word, depends on who's doing it. And I'll just throw it out there so that we get it on tape. The three D's, not the four P's from Philippians chapter 4. The three D's of why Satan puts the squeeze on us and tempts us and tests us. What his aim is. Three D's. Number one is distraction. Isn't it weird? The right kind of trial comes along and it completely derails our spiritual life. It's all we can see. It's right here in front of our eyes. We can't see the blessings of God dripping off the trees. I was talking with Monica about that. And a lot of times, you don't even know that's happening until you get down the road and you realize how ripped off you've been. Because the devil is taken and going, look over here. And meanwhile, you're being ripped off. So distraction is a big one of why the enemy tests us. This is a rabbit trail in case you haven't figured it out. The second D is discouragement. The purpose of discouragement is to get us to quit. Pure and simple. If you could take the 13 years I've lived here and boil every attack of the enemy down to one statement, it would be this. Stop what you're doing. It's not working. And get out of here. It's all distilled down to that. Discouragement is... And, you know, Hannah Whitehall Smith, my favorite Quaker lady, she said, all discouragement is from the devil. I was taken aback by that. I thought, surely there's some sanctified discouragement somewhere because I'm so good at it. I've spent all these years nurturing it. Surely God has to have a purpose in it. No, it's always from the devil. And, of course, the primary purpose in temptation is disobedience, which is aimed at destroying us. So there's our next rabbit trail. So Timothy came back, verse 6, and brought good news. And I told you the three things. I would think that if you have kids and you care about their spiritual life, and they're away from you, these would be three of the best things you could hear. He said, he told us about your faith. Remember, that's the P word, pistuo. Pistis is the noun, but it means everything's okay, Paul. They still trust Jesus. And they still love each other. There's no fisticuffs yet in Thessalonica. And that's a bigger deal than you think, because that's the way Satan destroys a lot of churches. He just turns people on each other. So He told us about your faith, your trust in Jesus. Everything's all right. They still trust Jesus. They still love each other.